Well, this is Plan B. It's on the other Marx, Eleanor, and it was originally given to one of our Sunday afternoon meetings on dangerous women. Now, I mean, not a lot of people know that Marx had a daughter who was an active socialist writer and agitator in her own right. And Marx and his wife had three children who survived into adulthood, all of them daughters. The eldest, Jenny, was born in France. The second, Laura, was born in Belgium. And the third, Eleanor, was born in England in 1855, and she was 10 years younger than Laura. Although she was born and brought up in England, she went to a school here in South Hampstead, in fact, because at the time, Marx was living in a Kentish town. Now, both her sisters married Frenchmen and lived in France. She was Marx's political secretary till he died in 1883, as well as looking after him after her mother had died in 1881. Now, after his death, she earned a living from translating and tutoring. She was the first to translate Flaubert, Madame Bovary, into English. But above all, she translated Ibsen's plays from the Danish. I assume if you know German, you could translate from classical Danish. Which, in fact, she did a bit of amateur acting herself. Now, she committed suicide in 1898, aged only 43, when her partner of 14 years left to marry somebody else after using up all her money that she'd inherited from Engels. Now, if you want to know more about her personal life, there are two biographies of her. One is the two volumes by Yvon Kapp, which came out in the 1970s. In fact, volume two was reviewed in the Socialist Standard in March 1977. These have just been republished. And there's a more recent one by Rachel Holmes that came out in 2014. Now, the Sunday Times, in its review of the Holmes one, opined or said, "How much better would the 20th century have been if it had been Eleanor's views on the freedom of women that had been adopted instead of her father's communism?" Now, this is wrong on two counts. First, of course, communism in Marx's sense was not achieved anywhere in the 20th century. But second, Eleanor was a communist, or socialist, as it had become known by the 1880s. She was a communist or socialist in the same sense that her father was. I'll give you a couple of examples. When her father died in 1883, she wrote a two-part obituary of him. The second part explains his labor theory of value and surplus value, and it's quite good. But remember that at that time, Capital had not been translated into English, only into French. Incidentally, the writings by and about her I mentioned, I put in the useful links column. And she was a member of the Social Democratic Federation that had been founded in 1883, and she served on its executive committee. She was also a founder member of the Breakaway Socialist League and signed one of the signatories of its manifesto, which began, "Fellow citizens, we become before you as a body advocating the principles of revolutionary international socialism. That is, we seek to change the basis of society, a change which would destroy the distinctions of classes and nationalities." The second example is in a review in 1886 of the English translation of Babel's Woman and Socialism, she wrote that socialism will be, I quote, "a society in which all the means of production are the property of the community, and that the first step to this is the expropriation of all private property in land and in all other means of production. With this would happen the abolition of the state as it now is." Now, when the Socialist League was taken over by anti-parliamentary anarchists, well, actually they were bomb-throwing anarchists. When this happened in 1888, she left and involved herself in organizing the unskilled workers, you know, the gas workers, dockers, match girls, and so on, involved in new unionism, as it was called. She attended International Social Democratic and International, where she acted as one of the interpreters, because obviously she spoke French and German as well as English. She was also the executor of her father's literary works, including the famous talk that he gave to English trade unionists in 1865, Value, Price and Profit, which ends with Marx saying that instead of the conservative slogan of a fair day's work for a fair day's wages, fair day's wages for a fair day's work. It was Harold Wilson that turned that round and told workers they were getting fair wages to work a fair day. And then instead of that slogan, they should have the trade union should adopt the revolutionary watchword, abolition of the wages system. She translated some of his writings from German into English and also from French, Lisa Gary's History of the Paris Commune and Plekhanov's Anarchism and Socialism. She rejoined the Social Democratic Federation in 1896 and was a member at the time of her tragic death in 1898. Now, what about the second part of the Sunday Times comment on a view on the freedom of women? She was what today would be called a feminist, that is, someone who stood for the equality of the sexes in all aspects of public and private life. But the term was not in use in that sense in the 1880s. Of course, this is what socialists had always stood for in principle since the utopian socialist Charles Fourier in 1824. But in the 1880s and 1890s, the women's equality had become a live political issue. On the Marxist Internet Archive file of her writings, incidentally, there's a link to that also on Useful. There are two in particular on this issue. One, it's the review I already mentioned of the English translation of Babel's book on women in socialism. And the other, a report on the discussion at the 1896 Congress of the German Social Democratic Party, which discussed what was called the woman question at that time. But before having a look at what she wrote, I want to make the point that she practiced what she preached. I mean, she lived for 14 years till her death with a man without getting married to start with, while he was still legally married. I mean, this was scandalous behavior for the time. So she was being very brave, even though it ended in tragedy. I mean, polite society, even fellow socialists, referred to her as Mrs. Aveling, and she signed herself Eleanor Marx Aveling. Nobody called her Miss Marx. So the title of that film is a bit, well, I can see why they did it, but it's misleading. Incidentally, I don't know whether Aveling is pronounced Aveling, but in the party, I've always heard it pronounced Aveling. Now, she clashed with Belfort Bax, who was a prominent member of both the Socialist League and then again of the Social Democratic Federation. And he actually wrote some acceptable stuff, I mean, copies of which are in the party's library. However, he was an opponent of equal rights, including the vote for women. I mean, basically, he was a misogynist. Eleanor accused him of womanphobia, a term which doesn't seem to have catched on. He called her a feminist, which is one of the earliest use of the term in its modern sense. Now, as a barrister, he disguised this in clever terms. On the Marxist Internet Archive site, there's an article he wrote for Justice, which was the organ of the Social Democratic Federation, in July 1895 on the woman question. In it, he lists what he regarded as legal privileges enjoyed by women, such things as not having to work at night or down coal mines, but he concentrated on two in particular, that a husband was legally responsible for his wife's debts and that a woman could freely leave a man, but if a man left a woman, he was required by law to pay for her upkeep. In fact, it was a criminal offence not to do so. This was the law at the time. Of course, what he didn't realise was that this confirmed the dependence of women on a man. This is a point Eleanor and her co-author Aveling made in the review of Babel's book. She said that it was all very well asking for and obtaining equal legal and political rights for women, but this didn't solve the problem, as the inequality between men and women had an economic origin. I mean, a married woman was economically dependent on her husband. At that time, and for many decades afterwards, the married woman was not expected to work for wages. Women who worked tended to be single and stopped working when they got married, even those working in factories. In fact, school teachers and civil servants were required to resign on getting married as part of their terms of employment. So hence the review's conclusion that only socialism could free women, because in socialism they would have independent access to what they needed to live, and so would no longer be economically dependent on a man if they chose to live with one. Now, this is a good argument, which perhaps has less force today, when in Britain a majority of members of the working class, people who work for wages, are women. It's still valid, of course, that in the socialist society and socialism, women would not need to live with a man for money or economic security, as many still do today. In fact, I'm surprised that campaigning organisations for women's rights, such as the Women's Equality Party, that they don't realise this. But then, of course, like many others, so they don't see beyond capitalism. Let me now comment on Clara Zetkin's speech on women question at the Congress of the German Social Democratic Party, which took place in Goethe in 1896. Helena entirely agreed with what Zetkin said, and the German party adopted. So what in fact did Clara Zetkin say? Well, first, that there was a different women's question for women of the proletariat, of the bourgeoisie, of the intelligentsia, and of the upper class, or the upper 10,000, as she called them. These latter, those of the ruling class, did not have so much of a problem because of their wealth. Although we could argue, though Zetkin didn't, that they still had a campaign to keep their property on marriage and to inherit titles and wealth. Then, this is Eleanor's words, I'm quoting, Frau Zetkin passed on the middle and petty middle-class woman. Here comes the true struggle against man, and in the text, against is in italics. Here, the educated woman, the doctor, the clerk, the lawyer, is the antagonist of man. The women of this class are sick of their moral and intellectual subjugation. They are Noras rebelling against their dolls' homes. They want to live their own lives, and economically and intellectually, the demands of the middle-class women are fully justified. As I said, she put this emphasis on as a struggle against man. As to the proletarian woman, this is Eleanor summarizing Clara Zetkin again, as to the proletarian women, their struggle was not against men, but with men against employers for better wages and working conditions, socialist reforms, social reforms, and in the end, for socialism. Actually, in her speech, Zetkin did not say that what she called the bourgeois women's movement was a struggle against men, i.e. against all men. She only said that there was competition between men and women for professional jobs. Nor did she use the word subjugation in relation to bourgeois women wanting to develop their individuality. She did, however, say that the economic as well as the intellectual and moral endeavour of bourgeois women's rights advocates are completely justified. We want to contest that. But that should have summarised Zetkin's view in the way she did, reveals her personal feelings. She was, after all, herself an educated woman, and she had chosen not to live in a doll's house and clearly resented the unequal treatment that educated women were getting compared with educated men. If that was indeed Eleanor's position, it represents difference from Clara Zetkin's. I'm sure you'll all like the title of Zetkin's speech, which is on the archive. It's entitled, Only in Conjunction with the Proletarian Woman Will Socialism Be Victorious. In any event, the position was inconsistent. You can't draw a distinction between the position of educated women and proletarian women. If educated women were in competition with men for jobs, so surely were proletarian women. And if the intellectual and moral endeavours of educated women were subjugated by men, then so were those, or so would be those, of proletarian women. Of course, so I'm just going to sum up now, whatever the reason for women's unequal treatment, whether subjugation, discrimination, unfair competition, or the weight of history, however you want to describe it, demanding equal treatment is justified. But then the question arises, how best to do this as an independent movement within capitalism or as part of the movement for socialism? Okay, thanks.